Welcome to the Fidelity Bank PLC audited results for H1 2017 conference call. There will be a question and answer session at the end of the call. Please go ahead.
Good day, everyone. My name is Nnamdi Okonkwo, Managing Director of Fidelity Bank. I welcome you all to this call. Before I go into our financial performance, I'd like to introduce my colleagues this call with me. Starting with Chijioke Ugochukwu, Executive Director, Shared Services and Products. I have Bolaoha Joshua, Chief Operations and Information Officer. Victor Abejegah, Chief Financial Officer. Kevin Ugwuoke, our Chief Risk Officer. Akeem Babalola, Treasurer. Tunji Mustafa, Head Strategy and Business Transformation. Sam Obioha, Head Investor Relations. Our H1 performance is a testament to what we've always said repeatedly, that our medium-term strategy will be focused on deepening our market share in the SME, retail, and digital banking segments while maintaining our corporate banking focus. At the same time, we'll be implementing various process improvement and cost reduction initiatives. The numbers we're discussing today actually rode on the back of this strategy. We delivered solid growth in our revenue lines, had a corresponding decline in our cost profile despite high inflationary environment. Our cost profile was something that kept us concerned, so we had to do work hard to bring it down to where it is now, and we'll be talking about that shortly. We recorded significant improvement in all our key operational indices, which includes cost income ratio, that improved to 67%, down from 77%. NPA ratio, which was 6.6% at end of last financial year, declined to 5.8%. Capital adequacy ratio improved to 18.4%. This is the first time we'll be having interim audit in line with our process and governance improvement initiatives. So going forward, we'll be having interim audit like we started this year. So as you all know, the numbers we're discussing today are audited numbers. So PBT for H1 is a remarkable improvement over 67% growth compared to the same period of last year. In absolute numbers, PBT grew by over 4 billion and was driven by a 3.5 billion growth in operating income and a 0.6 billion naira decline in operating expenses. So we made total gross impairments of 7.3 billion, while we had 2.5 billion of impairments no longer required due to net decline in our absolute NPL. Of over 12%. Of course, this led to net impairment charge of 4.8 billion, which you see under net impairment. And our NPL coverage ratio now rose to 99%. So we're starting to see the benefits of some of our customer service initiatives and product improvements, as well as our digital banking initiatives in the retail space. Recently, KPMG released the result of their annual KPMG customer survey, and Fidelity Bank ranked fourth best bank in retail segment, just in line with what we've been trying to achieve. We're not yet there, but this is significant for us. We're also leveraging digital banking to deepen our retail market share using analytics to improve customer experience. Recently, on our mobile banking app, USSD-based Star 770 Hash, we commenced a process of customer feedback where after each transaction, it prompted you to rate the bank and your service experience. This turned out to be an eye-opener because we started seeing over 100%. The kind of feedback we receive is like over 100% daily, more than what you would get from our regular customer contact center. So it just shows that it was the right decision to actually use digitization to improve service. We believe in the coming months and years, we'll see even better feedback from there. Okay, I go to key performance highlights now. Gross earnings grew by 22% to 86 billion. This was primarily driven by 28% increase in interest income and a 1% growth in fee income. Net interest income grew by 11% to 35 billion, driven by increased yields on our earning assets to 15.5%, which led to improvement in our NIM to 7.4%. This is despite the growth in funding costs. Now, our balance sheet optimization strategy to play at the short end of the maturity curve last year has yielded significant results this year, as we have been able to take advantage of increased yields when reinvesting our maturing fixed income securities. So this led to a 26% growth in the income on liquid assets through liquid assets volume. Excuse me, though liquid asset volumes have declined by over 75% since December 2016. Non-interest income grew by 1% to 11.2 billion, despite significant decline in e-banking revenues due to restrictions in international card transactions. You recall that a lot of banks, including Fidelity, discontinued use of Naira cards abroad when the FX liquidity squeeze was on. So our FX income grew by 98% to 3.4 billion. This was driven by positive margins on FX forward transactions and a significant increase in trade finance volumes as FX liquidity improved during this period. So, our total expenses declined by 2% to 31 billion, driven by a decline in about 60% of our expense lines. About 60% of our expense lines witnessed a decline. So the expense decline and revenue growth was instrumental to the 10% decline in cost income ratio down to 67%, which I mentioned earlier. Deposits declined by 4% to 761 billion, but with low cost deposits accounting for 75% of our total deposits. The deposit decline was driven by a combination of customer preference for high yielding government securities. What the environment has witnessed actually is that most deposit customers now, of course, want to take advantage of the high yield in government securities, maturity of FX forward transactions, and play down on NNPC LNG obligations. Our retail banking strategy continued to deliver impressive results as our savings increased by 4% to 161 billion in June this year. Of course, in Q2, we recorded a marginal decline in savings numbers. So on the strength of improved selling or cross-selling of our digital banking products, about 30% of our customers are now enrolled on flagship mobile products, our Star 770 Hash, and internet banking products. So for net loans, it increased marginally by 0.3% to 720 billion, with foreign currency loans now accounting for 41% of the loan book, which is down from 44% in December 2016. I would like to comment on loan to deposit ratio. While this looks high at 95%, we have funded a significant portion of our loan book using CBN intervention funds, long-term borrowing, and debt securities. When you factor this in and calculate the loan-to-deposit ratio, or more or less loan-to-funding ratio, it will actually be marginally below 70%. Cost of risk closed at 1.3% on the back of increased impairment charges, which improved our coverage ratio to 99%. You will recall that when we closed financial year 2016, our NPL ratio was 6.6%, and at our Q1 call, we had advised that we'll be working this down gradually. The intention is to come below 5%. But by H1, we have reasonably come down from 6.6% to 5.8%. Okay. Other regulatory ratios remained above required thresholds, with our capital adequacy ratio improving to 18.4% in H1. This was driven by capitalization of our audited profit and a reduction in net exposure to the same customer whose loan exceeded our one obligo limit due to currency devaluation in 2016. We witnessed a drop in that loan, so it also had some right back to capital adequacy. Before I round up, I would like to discuss some need-to-know issues. We have stress on capital adequacy. Often people would wonder, so if there is a harmonization of FX rates with IE window, where would that leave Fidelity Bank? So what we've done, we've stress-tested our capital adequacy ratio on the assumption that FX rates will be harmonized with I&E window. We used a reference point of 370 naira, and that test showed that even at 370, our capital adequacy ratio will still be above 17%. Our balance sheet numbers, numbers we're discussing, was reported using FX conversion rate of 305.9. Okay, that's the first information I wanted to, discuss. Then, on Nine Mobile, formerly Etisalat, we also think I should talk about this before I hand over to my colleagues. We want to disclose our exposure, actually. We do not have a bilateral exposure to Etisalat. We have the syndicated facility exposure, and our exact exposure to Nine Mobile is 17.1 billion. Naira, and I would like to give a breakdown of that. The Naira component is 11.2 billion Naira. FX component is 5.9 billion Naira or $19.3 million. So, we have not taken any specific impairment on Nine Mobile because we do not have any bilateral exposures. However, we have taken a general loan loss provision in line with applicable local accounting standards. So that's it for Nine Mobile. Finally, I will now comment on our Eurobond 2018. You will recall that we had earlier informed the market that we're reviewing our options and will announce our decision by September 30th. We are staying with that guidance. So by September 30th, we would have taken a position which we will communicate to the market. So on that note, I thank you for listening to this opening part of the conference call. I will now hand over to Bola Hong, who will take us through the detailed financial presentation. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Namdi. I'll just go straight to slide 4, which just shows an overview of Fidelity Bank, total assets of about 1.3 trillion. We operate from about 240 business offices, serving 3.8 million customers with about 3,300 professional staff and almost 900 consumer sales agents. From a digital channel perspective, we have about 783 ATMs, about 3,000 POSs, and from a digital penetration perspective, over 50% of our customers have our debit card, and about 30% of our customers have our mobile and internet banking platforms, about one in every three customers. If you go to slide 5, It just shows how we've used electronic products to drive our retail banking penetration, and it just shows about a three-year trend across the numbers. And right now, about 72%, over 72% of our customer transactions are done on our electronic channels. If you go to slide 7, we'll just speak about the operating environment and the key highlights there. Look at most of the bank's results. There's been a decline in credit to the private sector. There's some security concerns around the resurgence of some of the regional agitation. On the good side, inflation is declining, maybe not as fast as we wanted to. Foreign reserves are improving. Stock markets on the recovery path. The decline in GDP has reduced. Oil prices are above the budget benchmark. The currency has been relatively stable, and the MPC has maintained all indices stable. If you go to slide 9, which speaks about our performance highlights, Nnamdi has spoken about most of them, so I'll just go straight to slide 10. If you look at slide 10, which just speaks about what are the key things driving this number, 86 billion gross earnings delivered in H1, the bulk of that coming from fund-based income. The fund-based income was driven by the growth in our net interest margin to 7.4%. What was driving the growth in the net interest margin? The increased yield on our earning assets, which outpaced the increased funding cost. OPEX declined by 2%, even though we have an inflationary environment that is above 16%. So CIR is about 67.3%. Major declines in personnel, and then process improvement and digital banking initiatives helping to optimize our cost profile. Our actual impairment for the period, though net impairment was 4.8 billion, actual impairment was 7.3 billion. We had provisions no longer required of 2.5 billion. That was riding on the back of the 6 billion decline in absolute NPLs. So those were the provisions no longer required on those actual NPL numbers. So that led to the 67% increase in PBT to 10.2 billion, 3.5 billion of that coming from growth in the revenue, and then 0.6 billion of that coming from cost savings. Customer deposits slightly under pressure due to the high yield environment for fixed income securities. We still have 75% of our deposits as low-cost deposits. And our cost of risk, it's above our guidance of 1%, is 1.3%. NPL has declined from 6.6% in 2016 December to 6.1% in quarter one and 5.8% now due to the 12% drop in the absolute NPL figures. And the capital adequacy is back above 18%. If you look at slide 12, you see this a significant growth in FX income. Nnamdi has explained that was driven by FX forward transactions we did and a significant improvement in the trade volumes because FX liquidity improved very well during the period. If you look at operating income, it was up about 8.4% and then a decline of 1.8% in cost. If you look at slide 13, which just shows the quarter one and quarter two numbers, earnings, gross earnings was up 10% quarter two versus quarter one. Key drivers of the growth in the gross earnings was interest income on liquid assets and FX income, which was up about 2.8 billion, and then other fee income, which was up about 2.2 billion. From an operating income perspective, operating income was up 30% quarter on quarter, so that moderated even though OPEX went up 15%. And impairment costs were up about 400%, we're still able to deliver an 11% growth in profit because of the strong growth in operating income. If you go to slide 14, which looks at the balance sheet, you'll see a marginal growth in total assets, but earning assets are down 2.4%, and that's driven by the decline in the deposit base. If you look at the cash reserve numbers, technically, our absolute cash reserve ratio is closer to 30-31%, even though the regulatory threshold is about 22.5%. We're carrying almost close to 45.6 billion in excess cash reserve. If you go to slide 15, which just shows the quarter-on-quarter numbers, even though deposits were down on a quarter-on-quarter basis, you still see a 5% growth in the cash reserve numbers. If you look at our customer loans, you see that FCY loans are down. There was a slight growth in LCY loans, and then that reduction in FCY loans has led to FCY loans now contributing 41% of the loan book. You see some marked decline in the demand deposits. Part of that decline was driven by the FX forward transactions we entered into. A lot of them matured in quarter two, and so when the settlement was happening, typically it affects the volume of DDA deposits. I'll now go to slide 17, which is just a breakdown, a more detailed breakdown of the gross earnings. And you see it's clearly driven more from the 29% and 26% growth in interest income on liquid assets and then interest income on loans. FX income up 98% and then trade income up 125% due to the increase in FX liquidity over the period. If you go to slide 18, which just speaks about our net interest margin, there's been an upward trend from 2016. If you recall on our earlier calls, we had said that from about midpoint last year, we had decided to play at the short end of the curve, especially when the treasury bills rates were below the inflation rate. We felt that the yield curve would normalize and we wanted to be able to take advantage of rising yields when that happens, and that's exactly what we've been able to do. So our yield on earning assets has moved from 12.7% to 15.5%, and so even though there's also been a growth in funding costs from 5.8 to about 7.4, NIM is up to 7.4%. If you look at our total expenses, I'm on slide 19. You see a decline in a lot of the high cost numbers, and so 1.8% cost decline. Staff cost is down about 8%. This is basically due to the, if you look at staff cost stripping off the impact of the staff gratuity and retirement scheme, staff cost is actually up 3% period on period. So, but if you now strip this back in, it's now down 8%. If you go to slide 20, which just shows a year-on-year breakdown of our cost lines, you will see that almost 60%, we call it a decline in almost 60% of our cost line. If you go to slide 21, which is a quarter-on-quarter breakdown, our cost was up 15%, and then you see major lines responsible for that. And slide 22 just shows an analysis of our cost savings. Most of the lines will be able to save costs from telephone expenses, security expenses, legal expenses, technology costs. We've done some rationalizations of applications no longer required and all that. I'll now go to slide 24, which is a review of our funding base. Total deposits is 62% of our funding base. It used to be 64% as at 2016. And if you go to slide 25, which is just an analysis of the deposit base, low-cost deposits still 75% of total deposits, but total deposits down 4% on a year-to-date basis. Slide 26 just looks at our retail banking. We had a marginal decline in savings deposits in quarter two. A lot of customers took advantage of the high yield in government securities and also the federal government savings bond that was given a yield of 13%. However, you see a gradual decline in the consumer loan book. We've significantly tightened underwriting standards because of the lower consumer disposable income and the irregular salary payment in some of the sectors we lend to. Slide 27 just looks at our liquid assets position. And just like Namdi explained, loan book is funded by deposits, long-term borrowing, CBN intervention funds, and debt securities. If you look at absolute LDR ratio, it looks high at 95%. If you factor in interest-bearing liabilities, it's actually below 70%. The LDR of 80.4% here, all we factored in is the CBN bailout fund to the state. Actually excludes other intervention funds. Slide 28 is a breakdown of the loan book. $749 billion as at H1 compared to $743 billion. Marginal growth of 0.8% and absolute growth of about $6.1 billion. Most of the growth coming from the oil and gas sector, especially the downstream sector. We think we're slightly more comfortable with the structure of the way transactions are in that segment for now. If you look at slide 29, which just shows concentration of the loan book, oil and gas is roughly about 27%, manufacturing about 10%, and the power about 12%. And government is about 14%. Not a lot of changes in terms of the sectoral distribution of the loan book. The FCY loans down by about 300 basis points to 41%. And then I'm on slide 31 now, which just looks at our restructured and foreign currency loans. This is looking at it from a gross loan perspective. From a gross loan perspective, FCY loans are 43% of the loan book. But from a net loan perspective, it's actually 41%. And you just look at the sectors that contribute majorly to the FCY loan book. Oil and gas upstream is almost 50% of the FCY loan book. And then you look at what percentage of the loans in each of those sectors. So for the oil and gas upstream sector, our entire exposure there is FX-based. And look at restructured loans by sector. The bulk of restructured loans are in the power, construction, and oil and gas upstream segment. That accounts for about 80% of all our restructured loans. Slide 32 just shows a breakdown of our NPL. NPLs are down 12% between now and 2016 December. That's a decline of about $6 billion, and that has brought the ratio down to 5.8%. The major sectors in terms of absolute numbers, general commerce, transport, and then the consumer loan book, which is not surprising given the significant decline we've seen on that book. On slide 33, the pressure points on our NPL still remains our three key sectors, the transport segment, the manufacturing segment, and the general commerce segment. Those three sectors account for 70% of our NPL book. If you go to slide 34, which just shows how the coverage ratio has moved, it's moved from about 84% in 2016 to about 99% currently, and then you've seen a progressive decline in the NPL numbers. If you go to slide 35, which looks at our capital adequacy, it's at 18.45. We still taking a capital charge of about $13 billion due to the loan that is above our single obligor limit. We've stress tested this, assuming there was a harmonization of rates, and we used a benchmark rate of 370, which is roughly a 21% decline from the rates we used for the conversion of our financials, which is 305.9. And at that, our CAR will still be above 17%. Slide 36 just shows the contribution of each of the business units from a profitability, deposit, and loan portfolio. About 62% of the loan book is still in the corporate and investment banking space. We still have a medium-term target, short-term target 60-40, medium-term target of 50-50. Slide 38 looks at our H1 performance against our 2017 guidance. We're on track out of the eight indices. We're on track on six. We're behind on loan growth, and we're behind on deposit growth. Thank you, and we'll now take questions.
Thank you. We'll now open the lines for questions. To ask a question, please press 0 on your phone's keypad. That's 0 to ask a question and 7 to cancel your question request. Once again, to ask a question, please press 0 on your phone's keypad or 7 to cancel a question request. Thank you. Your first question is from Bumi Ashalu. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my questions. Bumi Ashalu from FBN Quest in place for Tunde Abide. I've got three questions. First, on the recovery or reversal that you mentioned. I think you both referred to this, but I'm not sure you gave more detail, or if you did, I just didn't hear them. So could you just shed some light on this? So which sector and what exactly was it that drove the reversal? And if there's anything we can expect also for H2 on this point. Then your services and construction loans have been trending up since the end of last year. I just wanted to understand what was driving that. And then finally, just a bit curious. I mean, you said this is your first audit. Most of the other banks that have audited results will also accompany their audited results with an interim dividend announcement. And I suspect that the market may have read into your audit decision an expectation that maybe there will be an interim, and maybe that's why your results didn't really, or the market didn't really react to the strong results that we reported. So I just wanted to know whether that was part of the consideration when you were auditing, as in whether you discussed it at all. And then for full year, are you still reaffirming your, I think it was 30 to 50% payout ratio?
Okay, thank you, Bumi. On the reversals of provisions no longer required, we had about 6 billion. Our NPL book dropped from 49 billion to about 43 billion. So we had about 6 billion of recoveries, of collection, we don't call it recoveries, on those loans. It cut across all the sectors, but the three major sectors were the transport sector, general commerce sector, and then the retail sector. So we had our provisions no longer required. On the services and on the loan growth on the services and the construction sector, if you look at the services sector, the loan growth there is about 33 billion. Q1 was about 36 billion, and then Q2 is about 39 billion. And then if you look at the construction sector, it's 22, 24, 26. For construction, there are one or two projects that we have financed. I don't want to make one public now, but it is a project that will be commissioned very soon by the federal government. And so when it's commissioned, it will be obvious what we were doing. For the services sector, these are just routine transactions in those segments. A couple of analysts had called when we released our results and from a dividend payout perspective, and what we've told them is that we are sticking with our full-year guidance plan, which is that we'll continue to pay dividends of 30 to 50% of our PBT in line with our dividend payout policy. So that hasn't changed. And like we said, the key intention of doing the interim audit was not to pay an interim dividend. The first key intention of doing it was from a process and governance and improvement perspective.
Okay, thanks. Just a quick follow-up. Just could you confirm that the AMCON charge you booked for the H1 results are not full? It's not the full year AMCON charge. I think the full year should be probably around 6. I think you did something like 3-point-something. I'm asking because a number of banks with their interim audits will also book the full year AMCON charge. Most of the other ones have done that. So I just wanted to confirm that you haven't taken the full charge yet.
No, as of 6 months.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you. Your next question is from Tolu from Exotic. Please go ahead. Your next question is from Paula from SUG Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you very much for the presentation. I wanted to ask around your e-banking income. So it's been trending downwards lately, and I mean, for H1, it declined by 63% Q-on-Q. I'm just wondering, despite a growth in your number of users over the same period, I wanted to know where do you see, how much do you see e-banking being proportion of total earnings as at full year? Because right now, from this presentation, it's at 4% from 11% last year. So I just needed more color on that, please. Thank you.
Okay. Last year, we made significant income from international card transactions. If you look at our presentation, this time last year, we're about 7.4 billion, and then right now, we're about 3.6 billion. About 4.8 billion of the revenues for last year were from international card transactions. Right now, we're doing about less than the limits we have on the cards are less than 1% of the volumes you could do over the previous period. If you actually strip that out, you see that in terms of the normal enrollment and transactional based in banking income, there has been growth on those lines. Secondly, when the new bankers tariff was implemented, there were some of the lines where we had positives, and there were some of the lines where we had negatives. But the main key driver of the decline in the revenues was revenues from the international card transactions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question is from Nike Akinyemi from Stanbic. Please go ahead.
Okay, good afternoon. My name is Nike. My question will be on your OPEX line, and we can see the decline in your personnel costs. We would like some clarity on the strategic approach you've taken in bringing it down, and then we don't mind if you can share some other cost optimization initiatives you've adopted in your organization. Thank you.
From a staff cost perspective, like I said, last year we took an exceptional charge of about 4.8 billion because we stopped a legacy retirement and gratuity scheme. We did see on our call last year that that cost us about 2.3 to 2.4 billion annually. So when the scheme was stopped, we paid off all the beneficiaries. Our total payment must have been in excess of 11 billion. So if you look at staff cost numbers and you strip that off, staff cost is actually up 3% on a year-on-year basis. But when you bring that in on its biannual basis, we save about 1 billion to 1.1 billion from that. On other cost optimization initiatives, last year we also spoke about the fact that we engaged PwC for 6 months to do a process review. So they reviewed all our processes and came up with new standard operating procedures. It's the benefits of some of those is what we are reaping now. It's led to some organizational realignment, and it's also led to using some proprietary technology to do some of the things that we're doing manually before. We have not yet completed the implementation of the outcomes. We're still implementing, and so that has assisted us to bring down some of our cost lines from a tactical perspective. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, to ask a question, please press 0 on your phone's keypads or 7 to cancel your question request. Thank you. Your next question is from Nick Dimitriev. Please go ahead.
Hi there. A couple of quick questions. If you can give us some color regarding your net FX position, and also I understand that you haven't made up your mind with regard to the euro bond, but if you can give us some color in terms of where the sinking fund is. I understand that you probably have some other FX liabilities that you have to pay prior to the euro bond, but any color would be appreciated. Thank you.
So in terms of two questions, what was the first one?
Net asset position.
Net FX. We're net long, I'll say north of $150 million. From the Eurobond perspective, I don't think I can give the actual figure of what's in the sinking fund, but I think, as Namdi has said, we'll make our final decision on our options known by September 30th. Thank you.
Thank you. There are no questions at this time. Please go ahead.
Well, let me thank you all for participating in this call. We'll continue to execute the strategy that has worked. We're not yet where we're going, but we're steadily making progress. So our key objectives for 2017 will remain balance sheet optimization to enhance earnings in a high-yield environment, increased customer adoption / migration to our digital channels, increasing our SME and retail banking market share, process automation to enhance service delivery, cost optimization initiatives to moderate expenses in a rising inflationary environment, proactive risk management given the challenges in the environment. We keep repeating this so it keeps us and our stakeholders focused. So those are the things we'll continue to do for the rest of the year. So on that note, I'd like to thank all of you for participating in this call, and have a good evening.
That concludes today's call. Thank you.